This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Mariners come from behind last night, down 4-0, get 5 runs in the 7th inning, and get the victory over a Detroit team that's been very tough to play against for the Mariners. The bullpen did well. Juan Nicasio came in, did a good job, and the bats came alive at the right moment, 7th inning, and of course, that evens the series at 1-1. James Paxton's going to be on the mound tonight, game time. Of course, he's going to be out there with a nice evening game on what should be a pretty good night. Vegas was able to get one win now within advancing to the Stanley Cup Finals, getting the victory last night, and so very exciting to see the expansion team doing so well. It does now look like, Johnny Manziel will go to Canada. At least he came back this morning and said that he is going to probably end up going up there, which is probably the only choice that he has if he really wants to stay in football. So I think that's a good decision, but it's really long overdue. He should have really done this and made that commitment months ago. But it looks like, he will be continuing his football career. Seahawks now have 8 of their 9 draft choices signed. Odell Beckham Jr. is going to at least report to the OTAs and be there with the team. That's encouraging to kind of get that story going. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And Dave, how are you on this Saturday?
John, doing great. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Looking forward to a good weekend. And, of course, NBA continues tonight. See if the Cavs are going to be in it. But I guess we got to continue to celebrate the Vegas team and how well they're doing.
Yeah, one game away from going to the Stanley Cup Finals, and that was a very entertaining win last night, and their crowd is frenzied. It continues to be an amazing tale of this expansion team that has risen further and faster than any other team in that circumstance. We talked about it on your weekly show. I mean, it's one thing, to say that, well, they took advantage of some favorable rules, and the NHL has always kind of had that, and they have. I mean, the Florida Panthers, when they were an expansion team, they won a Stanley Cup 3 years later. But that was 3 years later. I mean, it just does not, it's one thing to be able to get good players and get a fighting shot, but it's more than that, obviously. I mean, for teams to play at a championship level, they got to be teams. They've got to know each other's moves. It usually takes years to put together that kind of chemistry. And they threw this group together, and with a great goaltender, they are on the verge, and Winnipeg is probably the better team, to tell you the truth. But I don't think it makes any difference right now. I mean, it does not make any difference at all right now. Vegas is playing with more confidence. And that's the key. That's the key. So it was a very impressive night last night.
Yeah, it really was. And what also caught your eye by the other series with Washington, Tampa Bay?
Well, it's all road. I mean, that's the thing that's caught my attention on that one. And look, this is an interesting story as well. Now, Tampa, of course, under the stewardship of Todd Lywicki, has become an elite team, and they had, I think, their highest point total in their history this year. This is a team that's won the Stanley Cup before, so they are certainly worthy of being there. But for Washington, this is a team led by a superstar in Ovechkin. Outside of Sidney Crosby, he is the biggest star in the game over the past 5-10 years and was hyped as such and has produced as such, with one exception, that being the postseason. In fact, much like the Toronto Raptors would run into LeBron James, the Cleveland Cavaliers every year, it seemed, the Capitals would almost invariably run into Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins every year. I think they're 0-9-1 against the Pens. I think it's been years since they even made it out of the second round. This year they won, I think they had the President's Cup trophy. They're the most points certainly in the Eastern Conference. And they're trying to get to where they've never been before, obviously, which is the Stanley Cup Finals. So it's kind of been it's first time in 20 years for a team from D.C. to get to a championship round. And they're on the back of a superstar doing it. So you watch it in that series too. Ovechkin, and one of the things about hockey that's sort of underrated is the amount of minutes you play in a game, and you want to get your stars out there for as much as you can, even though they can be really worn out by the end of the game. And that's it with Ovechkin playing 25 or 30 minutes in a game, which is more than most guys play when you have the four lines, and they're really riding him. I mean, this is he's getting the opportunity that James Harden is getting to kind of pivot over to the NBA Finals. Harden hadn't been around as long, but obviously is considered an elite level talent, and the one blemish on his record is not taking a team to a championship. And he's in the process of trying to do it against a team that's been blocking everyone in the Western Conference the past couple of years, the Warriors. But back to the Washington-Tampa series, it's 2-2, and every team is one on the road, which is surprising. I mean, it's obviously uniform, like the NBA is uniform. The court is the same, like it is in football. Only baseball has a different playing field. But in hockey, just like basketball, the crowd can really make a difference, and normally does, and normally favors the home field and home court. Now, it's always true when you get to really elite teams and you get deeper into the postseason that home court matters a little bit less because the teams are so good. But boy, to have not have a victory by a home team yet in that series makes it completely unpredictable going into the best 2 out of 3, which is where they're at there. But for Vegas, it'll be quite a night if they can pull off that 4-1 win or 4-1 series win and advance through and wait for the finals. But I get the feeling that the Washington series with Tampa looks like a 7-game set.
Yeah, no question. and again, that'll be great to see. Now, of course, Cavaliers tonight, I mean, everything's on the line. If they can win, then they have a chance to continue. If they lose, it's over, and the LeBron James era is about ready to end. They're down 0-2. Can they do it?
Well, it's not over if they go down 0-3 because this is a team and a player that have come back from 0-3. So as much as it would feel like it's over, it's not necessarily over. But, of course, this is not that same team that did that. One thing that they're not feeling is pressure. It's certainly not LeBron. His supporting staff maybe. For Boston, you got a really young team which has defied expectations, and you know, that can work both, can work one of two ways. They can quote unquote feel it a little bit tonight. I mean, be on the road, in what will be a very hostile environment. You know, staring down LeBron James without the Celtic fan base behind them will make it very difficult. And remember, Boston, had a great second round series, but they struggled in the first round of the playoffs. So they've shown some vulnerability. But Cleveland is it's one way of looking at it, back against the wall, but I just don't think that they view it that way in Cleveland. I just don't. They've just been here too many times before. They're too experienced in the postseason. So I do think that they're going to win the game tonight. I don't think, even though I said it, before, that I wouldn't count them out at 3-0. I don't think they'd be able to come back from 3-0. LeBron James' future is still up in the air to a degree. He obviously can opt out and go wherever he wants to go, and it'll be the story of the NBA offseason. But look, nobody expected him to go back to Cleveland in the first place. So to assume that you know what he's going to do is, I think, folly. I mean, I just don't think that anyone knows exactly what's in his head and what he's going to do. He certainly has accomplished what he set out to accomplish in Cleveland, that was win that town a championship. But that's all getting ahead of ourselves. He needs to have a game where he gets other guys involved. I mean, the last game, game two, he went out and had 20-plus in the first quarter. The Cavaliers led throughout the first three quarters, then Boston ran them down. So that strategy didn't particularly work. Boston has kind of knows, and it's sort of what most teams do, that they let LeBron get his and figure you can stop the other guys. So I would expect that would be the Boston strategy going into this game as well, that someone else will have to beat him. So it'll be up to guys like Kyle Korver to hit shots, J.R. Smith to be productive for Cleveland to win this game. But a lot of drama there at Quicken Loans, a place where they've seen a lot of it over the past couple of years.
No, it's going to be fascinating. I'm really looking forward to see this one, and of course, see how Golden State tries to bounce back after a, kind of an off performance, particularly by Steph Curry.
Yeah, Steph Curry has been struggling, but I think that series is a little bit different in that the Warriors accomplished what everyone says you got to accomplish in a series, which is take the home court away. They won game one for a team like the Warriors, a championship caliber team, and a team with that kind of talent. They've frankly shown they can take the foot off the accelerator and they can spot a team a game or two here or there and still win. And I think that was part of what happened in game two. Not going to say they were relieved to get game one, but they felt like, look, that was our goal, to get game one. We got it. Houston, I give Mike D'Antoni a lot of credit. They didn't change one thing. Everyone was talking about what are they going to have to change, what adjustments they're going to have to make in their style of play to win, and they didn't make any adjustments. Houston is pretty transparent. I mean, they got to shoot threes to win. And that's sort of true of most teams in the NBA, but look, a team like the Warriors can play really good defense and can get by on that at times. Teams like Cleveland can, you know, have a mid-range game, and certainly the Warriors have a mid-range game with Kevin Durant. Houston lives or dies in the outside shot, and they've got great marksmen, and that helps them. But if you can slow them down from the outside, you can beat them. So for Houston, it's much more pressure, in my opinion, on them. They haven't gotten to this point before. They haven't beaten a big-time team in a long-term playoff series. They lost home court advantage even though they won game two. And I do think from the Warriors' standpoint, there's a little bit of concern about where Steph Curry is at. I think from their standpoint, they're a deep enough team that, well, they can adjust. We've got a new reality with Steph. I mean, he's not going to be a 40, 50-point guy for us, and so we're just going to have to rely on other guys. And they've got other guys like Kevin Durant, et cetera, et cetera. So I expect the Warriors to reassert command in this series and win game three.
Yeah, no question. But that's going to be fascinating to watch and see. So Mariners at home right now come back, and I think you can see the toll that they have as far as hitting. They were able to come back and get the five runs, scuffle to get a 5-4 victory. But, you know, Mike Zunino is now batting 193. Ben Gamble, since his injury, he struggled. He's down to 217. They still are trying to, you know, patch up the number three spot with Robinson Cano. So, you know, they're winning, but boy, it's more of a struggle now.
Well, it is. They're 9-8 in the month of May, that broke a two-game losing streak last night. You know, you don't want to take anything away from a great comeback win, although, as we've talked about many times in baseball, there's really no momentum. I mean, you play the next day. Your momentum, I think it's an old Earl Weaver line, the old manager of the Orioles, say momentum is whoever the next day's pitcher is. It is. I mean, it's a completely different day today. I think there are still some warning signs for the Mariners, and you pointed out a couple of them. Mike Zunino has really struggled. Ben Gamble, who had a big hit last night and was a key part of it, maybe that's the thing that snaps him out of it, has struggled as well. Obviously, the Cano situation is going to be one they're still adjusting to, and you saw Felix Hernandez after the game wearing a Cano hat. That's something that's obviously on guys' minds. It's obviously a factor in the clubhouse. You know, one of the things about Cano being suspended versus just being injured is he's not around. You know, that was going to be the one thing if he was hurt and was out for 4 or 5 weeks or whatnot. I mean, his cast will be on his hand. He could still be in the locker room, could still travel, could still be an element of the team. And he is a leader in that clubhouse, a leader in that locker room. You know, it's his team to a great extent. And being suspended takes him out of that mix. So, you know, he's out of the mix now. So it's a new dynamic going on in there as well. They made the decision with D. Gordon, which is, if you think about it, the logical decision to make with Cano missing half the season. There's no way you're better off with D. Gordon in center field and trying to put together a patchwork group of second basemen when you got in Gordon, a second baseman who is an all-star caliber player at that position and a Gold Glove winner at that position. Whereas, and I'm not a big subscriber to the advanced metrics, but according to fielding metrics, Gordon was one of the worst rated center fielders in all of baseball. And the Mariners do pay a lot of attention to those metrics. So this was a logical decision to make that they do that. Heredia or whomever out there in center field is a better option than having someone else at second base. But, you know, the Mariners are last night good, but they've had problems in their bullpen the last couple of games. 7 errors in the last 5 games. I mean, their defense has been a real strong suit. It has not been over the past couple of games. It's a Detroit team that they have struggled with, as you pointed out during the update, but they're in a stretch of games against teams with losing records where they're expected to make some hay in a division that looks like it's the toughest in baseball with the Angels and the Astros up top. So good win last night, a great win last night, a feel-good win last night, and you got James Paxton going today, so you know, it's you get a win in front of Paxton, you know, the expectation is with an ace like him, you got a 2-game winning streak rolling, and that's the hope going into tonight's game, is that exactly what happens. But you know, they got to play better. They're not playing particularly well over the past week, and they're playing about 500 ball over the past month. Their good start is what's kept them in a nice spot, and that's the true silver lining to all of this. We're talking about a team that needs to make the postseason by the end of the year. That's obviously the goal. And with the second wild card, which is, as we thought, it's become pretty crystal clear at this point that everyone else was playing for the second wild card. The Yankees and the Red Sox are both going to be playoff teams. In fact, I think there's a reasonable chance, John, that they're both going to win 100 games. So you're playing for that second wild card spot, and right now you're a half game out of it behind the Angels. The Angels have it right now. So despite the losses of Cano, despite playing sloppy over the past couple of weeks, despite playing 500 ball over the past month, you're just a half game out of that second wild card spot. So that's the important thing moving forward, to keep your eye on the prize. But I just think they need to start playing better baseball, and hopefully last night was the sort of thing that gives them a little bit of a boost.
No question. And they that, of course, with Paxton on the mound, that does make it exciting tonight. So what's on Dave Grosby's schedule today?
This time of the year, though it's nice, it's just hard for me to get away from the set. I'll watch the Preakness today, which is always interesting to me. And then by the time that's over, it's time for playoff hockey, and then it's time for playoff basketball, and then cap it off with little James Paxton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are you going to pop over to the game or just be watching?
I'm planning on just watching it.
Oh, good move.
Keep track of.
Well, that'll be great. And of course, thanks for joining us. And of course, Bob Gross and Tom, of course, weekdays from 12 until 3. We'll talk to you on Monday. And of course, we will be taking your phone calls. Let's load up the phone lines at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ben in Seattle. Hey, Ben.
Hey, John. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Hey, I just wanted to ask what you think about Dez Bryant. I'm thinking lately, if he's not going to get the money he's asking for, he might just head to the booth like Jason Witten. What do you think?
Somebody will sign him, but I think what's the problem is that at this time, it's hard to make an adjustment to pay the $8 or $9 million he probably deserves. And so
right. With
that, he's going to sit. Because, you know, it's one where, okay, you realize there's going to be some teams, and I think, you know, most teams are going to take the idea. It's like, you know, should we really take the chance on him? Because he can be such a pain. And do you really need that? And that, I think, is going to be working against him. And clearly, I think that is a big issue. And so, he doesn't help himself because, you know, he's still making bold statements. I mean, he made the bold statement that he wanted to be playing in the division because he wants to get back probably at the Cowboys. That's interesting. And then you realize, I mean, how much of a decline there has been in his game. I mean, there's a major decline in his game.
Right. Yeah, I know. Clearly, he lost a step. And then lastly, just curious, what do you think about Jacksonville's odds to win the Super Bowl? I know they just picked up a new D lineman on a great D line. Mm-hmm. The defense and a run game win championships. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, but again, quarterbacks win championships, and their quarterback's Blake Bortles.
I mean, that's true.
And so I don't buy the line about D, because you know, it's one where you think that's the case, but it really isn't the case. It's one where, I mean, you've got to have some kind of a good quarterback, because they're the ones that get you to come back in the fourth quarter of games. And they, they one or two drives and they can change everything. So, with Blake Bortles, their defense is great. I think they've done a great job of putting the team together. But in the end, I think it's still going to be very difficult. You know, you look at it, and sure, they were able to beat Pittsburgh and beat Pittsburgh on the road. But, you know, are they going to be able to consistently get that way? And I still question it.
Thanks for taking my call, John.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
How's it going?
How are you?
Pretty good. I had a great time at the Mariners game last night.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, five
wins. It had to be tough for the first six innings, though.
Oh, yeah. But I was really happy to see them win it all. But this, you know, this past week with this, with them being so shaky, I keep asking myself this question about baseball. Is it hard to be consistent in this game?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, you get into a routine and you know you're going to be facing good pitchers sometimes, and that's going to work against you. But, you know, what you still have to figure out is that how's your pitching? I guess consistency is with the pitching. And I don't think we've seen this now for a long period of time, certainly, you know, for about 10 or 12 years, where there's, you know, there's so few good teams. I mean, you have more teams that are necessarily down. And you look at the American League. There's only five teams right now with winning records. Five. I just find that incredible.
And I just feel that pitching should be our first priority before the trade deadline, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, now you still wonder, do they need a second? Well, I guess they're not going to go get a second baseman. I guess, do they need one more outfielder now that D. Gordon is at second base? I think they can get by, but the Robinson Cano thing really, I think, puts them in a tough, tough spot.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ben in Seattle. Hey, Ben.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Seattle offensive line. You know, invested a big first-round pick in a Ferrari of a running back. But as we've seen over the last 3 years, basically since we were in the Super Bowl, I haven't really invested in the line, and it showed. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
Well, I'd say I disagree. They have invested in the line. I mean, what the, you know, you may look at the numbers of pay, but the, you know, they've pretty much with either trades or draft choices almost invested an entire draft for an offensive line. You know, it's 2 second-round picks at start. If you include Eason Posick, they traded a second and a third for Dwayne Brown. They, you know, they. First-round pick in Jermaine Ifedi, third-round pick in Reese Odhiambo. Maybe it doesn't show as far as salary, but it certainly shows as far as commitment. And again, it hasn't worked to a degree, but again, I think that they've invested in the line. It just is in a different way than you expect.
Right. I think we went downhill when we sent Unger out to for Jimmy Graham. I think I guess we just haven't had a Pro Bowl lineman, and I'm wondering what it takes to get to a stout running game again.
Well, Justin Britt 2 years ago was the third alternate to the Pro Bowl. I don't know if he had as good of a season last year as he did then, but I mean, he's close, and now they have Dwayne Brown, who went to the Pro Bowl last year. Now, again, he didn't really deserve the Pro Bowl, but he made it more on reputation. But, you know, there are two Pro Bowl caliber guys on the offensive line.
Okay, cool. Thanks, John.
Okay, Ben, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up those phone lines as we get ready to take a look and see what's going to be happening. Still going back to the Mariners for a second. Yeah, I guess some concerns, because I think you're seeing some wear and tear on the team. Again, they still have the good record, which, of course, I think a lot of it has to do with the schedule and certainly the resilience. I mean, that was their 11th comeback last night, and they think they were tied for the lead. I think they now have taken over the lead for a number of comeback performances. So that was encouraging, but still, it's a interesting look at where they stand and what they can do and where they are. So want to get your reaction to that. You know, how good can this team be? How solid is it? Overall, it's been kind of a fun season to see the start that they've had. So get your reactions. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Paul in Kent. Hey, Paul.
Hey, John, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thank you.
Listen to you all the time. Hey, I wanted to get your opinion on what we can expect from the Schottenheimer offense coming out this year, just because he's a new coordinator, and give us some insight on what we expect to see.
Well, I mean, certainly, I mean, I think you can see it's going to be prone to run the football. I think you can see it's going to be a little bit more basic. You know, you're not going to necessarily see the West Coast. Well, you'll see a little bit of the West Coast type offense, but I think what you'll watch is that he's got a very good, solid ground game. And I mean, you go back to when he was with the Jets, and you know, they pounded the ball on the ground, and you know, his father was very much into the run, and so I think that's what you'll see. I think that you'll see that he'll take total control of Russell Wilson, and see. one of the issues, and again, when things work, I mean, there's no issue. But when some things weren't working, you know, they had two voices on offense. I mean, you'll have Tom Cable, who was the assistant head coach in charge of the ground game, and Daryl Bevel, who was the offensive play caller, is the offensive coordinator. But some things just didn't jive. And because of that, I think that it made it very difficult to, you know, fix some of the problems. And so, Pete has made that change. But what you can see is that it's pretty clear that his voice, Brian Schottenheimer's, is the voice. I mean, it's him and him alone. And so that, I think you can see, is going to be encouraging.
Awesome. Thanks, John.
Okay, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, I think that, I mean, you very well notice the presence of Brian Schottenheimer because, I mean, he is there. I mean, he's certainly the one voice that, you really want to see and, try to see it. And I think that it's going to be interesting because now we finally get a chance to talk to him. We haven't had a chance to have that open interview yet. That's not been part of the equation. So that'll be kind of fun to get an idea, how he feels about things, what he thinks about this team, what his plans are. All those things will be germane and up for talk. So, thoughts on that? Want to get your thoughts on Dan Graziano this week, pretty well saying that, this was a team that probably lost more than any other team in the National Football League. You can say that certainly the losses that they have been bad, but again, can they bounce back from it? And I think that they can. I think that they're still a good football team that has a lot of positive things that are going to be, there. And I think you can see that'll be kind of fun to see and watch. So, give us a call on that. Give us a call on what you think as far as what more should they do. I know some people think they should go get Dez Bryant. I don't. I think that would be just way too much because, the scale, they're trying to fix some of the things that have gone wrong and slipped away last year. And I think that would just be way, way too much. So your thoughts on that? 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to David in Buckley. Hey, David.
Hey, John. How's it going on this beautiful Saturday?
Really good. How about for you?
Well, I'm kind of with you. I think this is going to be like a rebuilding year for the Seahawks. And one of the things I'm glad they got, even though we lost Bennett and Sherman, I think it was time for them to go. I just think that the last couple of years, you could see the transcending from a kind of a really close-knit team to a lot of guys that were being disgruntled, especially Richard Sherman. And I'm sorry to bring it up again from old news, but the Super Bowl hangover for Richard Sherman, for him, is never, ever going to go away. And he blames the coaches. He's resentful of the coaches. He even probably still blames Russell Wilson because he's taking this personally. And he drags everybody down. And, it just seems like there was always these triggers, like the Atlanta game. He blows up at the coaches. At the Arizona game last year, the only player on the sideline blowing up at the coaches and screaming and yelling and going on the podium. And it just seemed like it was time for some of these guys. It was time for a retool. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think that and that happens. Richard is one that thinks only of one thing. He wants to get to the Super Bowl. And I think that probably sometime in the last 2 years, he thought that what he saw in the team, there was some decline that was going to prevent that from happening, and he just couldn't deal with it. Clearly, he still was battling on different things, and eventually he just it was you're right, it was probably time to go.
Yeah, it just seemed like, that moment in time, he's been resentful, he's been bitter and angry, and I think it's just been it's dragged on everybody else on the team. When you have that one player, and that's why I think, you don't go out and get a Dez Bryant or a Brandon Marshall. If you're going to retool this team, let's do it right like we did back in 2011.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, try to take away the negativity.
Yeah, and also I want to make a comment on this Cano thing. I'm sorry, I have absolutely no sympathy for this man. I mean, every time you hear over and over again, I didn't know what it was in the supplement. My doctor gave it to me. I've been in healthcare for 40 years as a hospital administrator. I guarantee a personal physician does two things. They diagnose the patient, and they treat them the best way they can treat them with the medication that is for that diagnosis. They don't know what's on the banned or list or what is or is not. Now, it was up to Cano to go to his, hey, my doctor's going to give me this. go to the team doctor, even Major League Baseball. Am I going to be okay? They always wait till after they get popped, and then they come out with this excuse, well, my doctor gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't accept it anymore.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that you know, he deserves as much criticism as possible. Did you hear what Mark Teixeira said about him in the last couple of days, his former teammate?
But I heard what Service says, well, some guys make mistakes and we're going to, you know, I get so sick and tired of hearing that from managers.
Mm-hmm.
Hold your players accountable. He screwed up. It cost our team. I'd be pissed.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think it cost, and I think you can see it with the churning. I mean, look what happened, how everything went really askew when Nelson Cruz got hit by the pitch and was out for 2 days. I mean, then had to take Mike Zunino batting 193 and make him the designated hitter. It just put this team in a really tough spot. And, you know, I think what so far since Cano's been gone, they're batting like about 250 with limited numbers of runs batted in and runners in scoring position. And
that's
a big hole.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's like you've taken a team that was somewhat on the cusp of making the playoffs, and you've basically just choked it.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you've had to switch. And when you switch one guy, everybody gets switched.
Right.
The batting order gets switched. It's not just one guy. It's everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in football. If you lose one guy on the offensive line, it's not just one guy it affects. It affects everybody because everybody has to change.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking my call, John.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Mike in Tacoma. Hey, Mike.
Hey, John, could you explain to me the difference between last year and 1984 about the waning popularity of NFL football and the attendance and everything? I know there's totally differences because the Star Spangled Banner and all that, and the players standing or sitting. But I know there's some similarities, but I know there is some differences. But is there anything?
And you compare it to what, 1984?
Yeah, it was like one of the worst years for NFL.
Yeah, yeah. See, I don't buy the idea that interest is waning, and certainly now with gambling now being approved, interest is even going to get more into football. I think what it comes down to is that there's some things that need to be worked on in the game. I mean, I think that the quality of play has dropped a little bit. Some of it has to be, you know, the worry about concussions and all that stuff. That has to get in there. But I think overall, there's still a judgment problem that's still difficult for on the ratings, because now you have the millennials just watching, you know, more on a cell phone, and that doesn't register with the TV ratings. You can see that some, maybe with the price of tickets, that's causing a little bit of a drain on attendance. But overall, I mean, the revenues continue to grow at 10 plus million dollars a year, or billion a year. I mean, because, you know, what you're seeing is it's now a $14 billion business. So it's actually growing at about, you know, $1.3, $1.4 billion a year. And, you know, now they continue to strike deals. I mean, just when everybody was jumping off the bandwagon on the TV ratings, I mean, here's Fox coming in on Thursday night and paying more. They paid, what, $650 million for Thursday night football when NBC and CBS were losing money on it. They were losing like $50, $60 million a year. So, no, I still think, you know, the game's solid. But again, there's still, I think, quality issues have to improve. You know, the fantasy has certainly helped overall. It's helped everybody, you know, with the interest in the game. So I wouldn't compare it to 1984. I mean, 1984 was, I mean, you had the quarterbacks from the 2013 draft just starting to get established. But, you know, overall, I still think that the game is still healthy. But, yeah, but there's some hiccups there that they got to fix.
Well, how much can you tinker with it without turning people off? Because I know the big question, okay, keeping everybody healthy and safe, but how much can you do that in 1 year or 2 years without having the public going, hey, man, this isn't what I signed up for to watch?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I think that's a fair thing, because I think that, you know, they're on the verge of tinkering with it too much. I mean, you know, last year, for example, I thought they made a major mistake by, you know, letting too much of the replays become more involved in New York. Now, again, that's a good idea because you can speed up the way the replays are because, I mean, they can look at the same pictures that the referee's looking at and make a quicker decision because, you know, they have all the technology to be able to do that. But my problem with it is that, okay, they're making too many judgments from New York and tinkering a little bit too much. And again, the stoppages of the game. I mean, that's why, for example, I worry about the helmet rule, lowering the helmet, because if it's going to cause 2 to 5 more penalties a game, that's going to be bad. Because what will happen is, you know, that the stoppages of the games do not help the games.
And having your stars maybe get kicked out of the game, too, mm-hmm. that isn't going to help.
No, agreed. No, that's
right.
It's a big issue,
John,
and I think that is a problem.
I just wanted to get your perspective on that. I mean, because everybody's been talking about, oh, the NFL's down. I mean, I even heard some guy on the radio station talking about that. Sooner or later, there won't even be people in the stands. Everything will be closed monitor because of the gambling. Nobody's going to really need to have to go to the game to watch it.
Yeah, I don't buy that. It's still a great sport. It's still very entertaining. You can see that there's great interest in the game. So no, I think that, you know, football will be fine. But again, it can't lull itself to sleep. I mean, I think the biggest worry down the line is going to be, you know, how concussions not affect the current players, but the players coming up, the young players, and how they are in junior high school and high school. That if the talent pool starts to dry, then there's going to be some problems. But good call, and thank you for the call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's hit the phones. Of course, we'll chat about the Mariners at the top of the hour with Gary Hill, but want to get your thoughts over both on the Mariners and also on the Seahawks and also about the National Football League. How do you feel, by the way, about the kickoff rule? I mean, are you worried like I am that ultimately you may not see kickoffs at all next year? I mean, you'll see revised versions coming up, this year with some of the rule changes they're talking about, and it'll be voting on at the owners' meeting. Concussions, of course, being the big question that is on everybody's mind right now, and you know what changes are they going to make? So, you know, how do you feel? It's like, you know, I don't know if we can find a fan that's going to endorse the idea that's like, oh, guess what? We want to eliminate kickoffs. I just don't know if that's the case because I think, most people do like what they see with the kickoffs. And I think that, they want to see the exciting part of the game. But, you know, how would you react if they do take away kickoffs? 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Again, I just think it's a bad idea. What I like about the game itself is that, you have the chance to get a game-breaking play. Certainly, you know that only like 43% of the kicks are going to be returned anyways, and even the best returners in the game may only get about, 28, 29 chances. I'm kind of wondering now with the changes they're doing right now if it could enhance and get more guys to get a chance to break some kicks. I'm kind of wondering. I'm going to be really curious to see how that's going to affect everything. But, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Steve in Burien. Hey, Steve.
Hey, John. I don't, as far as kickoffs go, I think it's going to wind up being like baseball where opposing team gets the, first crack at the 25 or else they have a coin flip for first possession at the 25. But what I like to call about is that new punter we got.
Oh, yeah.
Ever since I first saw Australian rules football and saw how these guys could kick that ball of theirs accurately, I could never understand why that never caught on in the NFL because, the idea of a guy that could roll out, put pressure on the corner of the punt return team, could kick the ball, especially if he could kick a line driver that barely goes about, head level, like screams in there. He kicks it right in the middle of the return team, and it bounces around, hits one of the return guys in the back or something like that, and you get a mad scramble for the ball. I just think that if this kid could turn out, I get your opinion. If you've seen him, what do you think of him? Could he be the type of punter / whatever that could make a difference in the style of the way a punting game is?
Yeah, I think he can. I mean, because, again, what I watched is some things I really haven't seen much of, and he's so good at it. And what you watch with him is that, he puts it so high, but when you watch the ball come down, it comes down at a very difficult angle. I mean, because it almost looks like it's a duck that's being shot out, and all of a sudden it's kind of flopping. And what I would anticipate, I mean, you'll probably see, the chance that some – kickers, some returners are going to miss the ball. I mean, they're going to get turnovers over this. I mean, he's very precise.
The ball, he puts a different spin on it. Not so much an over, it's a sideways spin because he kicks the ball from the side, so it puts like a weird spin type motion to it. But what I'm also going to be curious about, if he's enough of an athlete where he rolls out, now the punt return team has to worry about covering the corner because he could run. And then if you put a blocker / cover guy out there with him, because normally if he's going to roll out, what the return team's going to do is they're going to put a guy on the corner to cut the angle down and try and either tackle him or block him or whatever. So then you put a blocker out there, which is also conceivably a receiver. Now that receiver can do a touch block, do a little hook or a button or something, and the guy can just lob him the ball. Or he can take off because now he has a blocker in front of him. So there's all kinds of options there if this kid's enough of an athlete. And I called some other guys on your show last when he first got drafted, and I got poo-pooed by them about, them making fun about, oh, he's going to do this and that. He's going to be all kinds of things and stuff. I think he can be if he can be that type of athlete. What do you think?
I really see good things with him because, again, he's so unique and he's so precise. I mean, you should watch him drop kick. I mean, he's so good at the drop kick that that's going to be an element you want to see if they want to try to do. So, no, I think that he's a very unique kicker. Most people think he's one of the most unique that have come out in many years, and that's why they traded up in the fifth round to try to get him. Hey, Steve, great call. Let's go to Tracy in Polsbo. Hey, Tracy.
That have come out in many years.
Tracy, turn down the radio. Tracy.
Hi.
Yes.
Sorry.
No problem.
I want to make a comment about the potential kickoff rule. I would hate that, so I hope that doesn't happen. But what I wanted to address was one of your previous callers was talking about the offensive line and was concerned that the Seahawks haven't really addressed it. But I think one of the things that he's not taking into consideration is we have a completely different line coach now.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though we might have some of the same players, I think things can look a lot different if they're coached differently. And then I also wanted to ask you, John, what you thought they were going to do with Shaquin Griffin.
Yeah, with Griffin, I mean, he'll be the backup weak side linebacker and be very involved with special teams. That's going to be his specialty. But what I think you're going to like about Mike Solari is that it's going to be kind of old school type blocking. I mean, it's going to be a lot of creativity, but it's going to be more physical. I mean, it's not going to rely as much on, the deception and trying to, roll out and do different things. And he'll get the guys to be more physical. I think that he could do a very good job with Jermaine Ifedi. We'll see how Ethan Pothick fits in. I know he's up to 322 pounds right now, but we'll see how that works. But I think that as Doug Farrar said, I mean, he might be the most important acquisition of the offseason because of what he can add to this team, because he's so good at what he does as far as the blocking schemes and all that. And, you go back and you watch last year, he had a kind of a bad offensive line with the Giants, but, I mean, he was able to develop two pretty good Brett Jones, who came over from the CFL, he became almost the better center, and Wesley Richburg ended up going to another team. Then the next thing was he took DJ Fluker, who was kind of a disappointment from the 2013 draft, put him in there for run blocking, and they were able to run the ball 25 yards a game better than they were when he wasn't there. Now, again, he got hurt, but no, I think Solari was a great, great acquisition. Hey, Tracy, thank you so much for the phone call. Let's go next to David. Hey, David.
Hello. I am totally in favor of getting rid of the kickoff and doing, after touchdowns, do like a 4th-and-10 or a 4th-and-15 type of punt situation for the scoring team to give the ball back to the opposing team.
Really? I don't know if I you so how would you get this done? So instead of having the kickoff, how would you get the ball to the other team?
So after the extra point, the scoring team still has the ball, and then you put them back on their side of their field, just like you do with the kickoff.
Right.
But instead of it just being the kickoff, you put them in an automatic 4th and 10 or 4th and 15 situation. So if it is the end of the game where you need two scores, you still have a chance to go for it. And if you get that 10 or 15 yards, whatever you decide it would be. Then they can retain possession and they can still do another drive and potentially score that second touchdown that they might need. Or if it is, you know, whatever second quarter, he just would have kicked it off anyway, then you can do a normal punt and give it back to the other team.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just tinkering with the game too much. I mean, this is football and kickoffs and kickoff. I mean, you know, Devin Hester, we talked to him a couple weeks ago. He probably wouldn't have been in football were it not for the kickoffs. I mean, you know, because he came out of college. It took him 2 years to kind of get established as a wide receiver. But, you know, there'll be so many things falling through the cracks. So I don't know. Again, people are going to be coming up with ideas because, listen, it's heading in the direction that you're predicting, not as far as the result, but as far as what's going to happen with kickoffs. Hey, thank you all for the phone calls. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, we'll talk to Gary Hill, talking about the Mariners. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.